Thank you for purchasing Beacon Hill Audio Tour with Atlantis Audio Tours and Free Tours by Foot. Boston's Beacon Hill is, and always has been, Boston's most exclusive neighborhood, where politicians, poets, and philanthropists, among others, have made their home. It is a neighborhood that many tourists fail to explore, as it can be a bit intimidating without a tour guide. But this self-guided tour should make navigation of the neighborhood easy. The tour is about 1 mile or 1.5 kilometers and should take you about an hour. You can find a companion PDF and Google Map in your confirmation email. When it's time to move on to a next stop, I'll let you know so you can pause the audio. Take as long as you want to meander the streets of Beacon Hill and pick up at the next stop. Okay, let's get going.
Start your tour at the Massachusetts State House at 24 Beacon Street. This new state house was opened in 1798 on land that was once owned by the great patriot John Hancock. It is the oldest continually running state house in the United States and is still today the seat of government for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The building was designed by Charles Bulfinch, who designed much of the architecture you will see in the Beacon Hill neighborhood. Notice the 23-karat gold dome, which is 30 feet high and 50 feet around. It was gilded in 1876 on our nation's 100th birthday. The Massachusetts State House offers free tours during the hours that it's open. Enter through the General Joseph Hooker entrance for a free tour of inside of the State House. Face the Gold Dome and walk left down Beacon Street to Walnut Street, about two blocks down Beacon Street. Take a right up Walnut Street and you are entering the historic Beacon Hill neighborhood.
Next stop.
All the lampposts that you see are lit by gas, just as they always have been. Notice the window boxes with their arrangement of flowers. This is a very distinct part of the neighborhood. Also, if you look down at the door stoops, you will sometimes see little metal bar-like contraptions, which are called boot scrapers. These were useful in the 1800s and early 1900s, when the main mode of transportation was horses. One could scrape the horses, let's call it exhaust, off their shoes before entering their homes. Just as practical today as in the past. At the top of Walnut Street, you will come to Mount Vernon Street. Look right for 55 Mount Vernon Street.
Next stop.
This structure is a great example of the Federalist style of architecture that was the trademark design of Charles Bulfinch. Bulfinch is considered to be the first American-born architect. Many of his contemporaries were British immigrants. He was also the third architect of the Capitol in Washington, D.C. It was built for Jonathan Mason in 1804 and welcomes visitors and provides a look into the life of Beacon Hill residents in the 19th and 20th centuries. Inside, you'll find the original art and furnishings of the Nicholas family, who purchased the house in 1885. Rose Standish Nicholas spent most of her life in this house. She was a landscape architect, peace activist, and suffragist. In 1961, a year after her death, the Historic House Museum opened with items collected over the family's generations in the house. Facing the House Museum, walk left down Mount Vernon Street. As you travel down Mount Vernon Street, notice 57 Mount Vernon Street.
Next stop.
This was the former residence of Daniel Webster, not the dictionary guy. Daniel Webster was the U.S. Senator representing Massachusetts, as well as a three-time Secretary of State under three different presidents, Harrison, Tyler, and Fillmore. He was a character in the Mark Twain story, The Devil and Daniel Webster. Charles Francis Adams Sr. of the political Adams family also lived here. His father was President John Quincy Adams, and grandfather was President John Adams. He served as a state senator and was the ambassador to the United Kingdom during the American Civil War. He built the first presidential library to honor his father in Quincy, Massachusetts. Webster is remembered for his oratory skills. Ralph Waldo Emerson, who was a critic of Webster's political decisions, said that he was the completest man and that nature had not in our days or not since Napoleon cut out such a masterpiece. Continue walking along Mount Vernon Street to number 65.
Next stop.
At 65 Mount Vernon Street, just above the archway, you will notice an engraved Cabot, where Henry Cabot Lodge once lived. Henry Cabot Lodge, a Republican senator from Massachusetts, was the first unofficial Senate Majority Leader and best known for his foreign policy disagreement over the Treaty of Versailles with President Wilson. Lodge wanted to sign the treaty and join the League of Nations with reservations, whereas Wilson wanted to join with no reservations, meaning that the U.S. could be forced into a war without approval by Congress. In the end, the U.S. never joined the League of Nations, and it was never a successful organization. When its successor, the United Nations, was formed, Lodge's reservations were incorporated, and the U.S. has veto power. Continue down Mount Vernon Street and look over at 85 Mount Vernon Street.
Next stop.
Here you will see the Harrison Gray Otis House, built in 1802 by Charles Bulfinch. It is the last remaining freestanding house on the hill. Everything else is condos. It is a classic Charles Bulfinch design. Bulfinch's Federalist design includes classic features of domes, columns, and ornamentation. Harrison Gray Otis was the third mayor of Boston, a U.S. congressman as well as a U.S. senator and member of the Federalist Party. He was also one of the richest men in Boston at the time. He had another house in Boston built by Charles Bulfinch at 141 Cambridge Street that is now a museum open to the public. Continue down Mount Vernon Street to the intersection of Willow Street and Mount Vernon Street.
Next stop.
The poet and Pulitzer Prize winner Sylvia Plath lived at 9 Willow Street in 1958. They had moved here from Northampton and would relocate to England after, so they were only in Boston for a short time. This apartment overlooks Acorn Street, which is considered one of the most beautiful streets in America. Plath was married to the English poet Ted Hughes, had two children, but suffered from depression and committed suicide at age 30. In 1998, Hughes, who was Britain's poet laureate, released a book of poetry, many of them dedicated to Plath. One of them is entitled 9 Willow Street. Each of us was at the stake, impaling the other, we struggled, quietly through the streets, affirming each other, dream maimed and dream blind. Stand at the corner of Willow Street and Mount Vernon Street and look at 88 Mount Vernon Street.
Next stop.
Notice the plaque at 88 Mount Vernon Street, where the poet Robert Frost lived from 1938 to 1941. Robert Frost died 2 weeks before Sylvia Plath at the age of 88. He was an accomplished Pulitzer Prize winner and Congressional Gold Medal holder and was asked, at the age of 86, to read a poem at John F. Kennedy's inauguration. The most famous Frost poem is The Road Not Taken. You may be familiar with its closing line. Two roads diverged in the wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Standing in front of 88 Mount Vernon Street is a great view of not only Boston's most exclusive section, but one of the most expensive places to live in the country. This place is called Lewisburg Square. It is a block of condos split in half with a private park running through the center of it. The writer Louise May Alcott, best known for her 1968 novel Little Women, once resided here. At the end of the square, where you see the American flag, is one of former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry's current residences. Follow Mount Vernon Street down to West Cedar Street. Take a left onto West Cedar Street. As you travel down West Cedar Street, notice the beautiful window boxes. Soon, you will come to Boston's most photographed street, Acorn Street. The view from the bottom looking up is the better view.
Next stop.
The street is made up of river stones from the Charles River and is one of the few streets that have their original cobblestones. The Boston landscape was, and still is, filled with stones known as cobs. When the city was being built, these stones needed to be removed, and cobbling the roads turned out to be a practical use for them. They are not fun to walk on, or drive, bike, or ride a horse on, which is why true cobblestone streets are pretty rare nowadays. Follow West Cedar Street and take a right down Chestnut Street. Did you notice that many of the streets of Beacon Hill are named after trees? You will eventually come to Charles Street, the shopping district for the Hill residents. This street is a quaint street, dotted with antique shops, restaurants, and boutiques. Take a left on Charles Street and follow to the end, about a block, and you are back on Beacon Street. Take a right on Beacon Street. take a short detour and cross Beacon Street and enter the public garden.
Next stop.
You will come to a statue of the children's story, Make Way for Ducklings, where a row of baby ducks are following their mom. You can sit on the ducks and take a photo if you like. Make Way for Ducklings is a children's book published in 1941 by Robert McCloskey. It tells the story of a couple of ducks who decide to raise their offspring in the lagoon inside Boston's public garden. Due to the popularity of the book, the sculpture was designed and completed in 1987 and placed on the Charles Street entrance to the public garden. The sculpture shows Mrs. Mallard leading her 8 ducklings, Jack, Cack, Lack, Mack, Knack, Whack, Pack, and Quirk, walking in a row behind her. A very popular destination for the young and old in Boston, the ducks are usually dressed for the holidays. When Boston sports teams are in the playoffs, they normally don the jersey of that team. In 1991, First Lady Barbara Bush presented a copy of the sculpture to Raisa Gorbachev, and that copy now resides in Novodevichy Park in Moscow. Exit the public garden back through the gates, and you will be back on Beacon Street. Cross back to the corner of Charles and Beacon Street, and follow Beacon Street to number 84, where you will come to the Bull and Finch Pub.
Next stop.
This bar is known all over as Cheers, where everyone knows your name. The original pub was founded in 1969. The exterior is recognized around the country as the opening shot in the TV show Cheers. Grab yourself a drink and/or a famous Norm burger. Read our full post on how to visit the Cheers bar. After you exit Cheers, take a left on Beacon Street back to Charles Street. Stroll down Charles Street and check out the many shops and cafes. Notice the Paramount at 44 Charles Street. It's a good place for breakfast or lunch and our next stop.
Next stop.
Look up at the residences on top of the restaurant. The second floor apartment was where a woman named Mary Sullivan lived. She was the last and, at 19 years old, the youngest victim of Albert DelSalvo, the Boston Strangler. Her body was found in that apartment on January 4, 1964, at about 6 o'clock p.m. by her roommates Patricia and Pamela. Mary just moved in 3 days earlier. Her body was displayed in a seated position, with 3 ligatures around her neck, a charcoal nylon stocking, a pink scarf, and a pink and white scarf with a floral design. All 3 were tied in a bow, a signature of the Boston Strangler. The killer also placed a card leaning on Mary's left foot, addressed to the Boston police, that read, "Happy New Year." This was the only crime scene where a note was left by the Boston Strangler. Also, the Boston Strangler never brought any items which he used to strangle his victims. All the items were found by the killer inside the victim's residence. In 2003, Mary Sullivan's nephew wrote a book called A Rose for Mary, where he argues that Albert DelSalvo did not kill his aunt. In the book, he states that she was killed by an ex-boyfriend who displayed her body to make it seem like she was a victim of the Boston Strangler. Some of the details of the crime reports were published in the newspapers at the time. In July 2013, DNA recovered from the crime scene inside Mary Sullivan's apartment in 1964 was compared to a living relative of Albert DelSalvo. It produced a match and excluded 99.9% of possible suspects. A week later, Albert DelSalvo's body was unearthed and a DNA test was conducted. The results of that test stated that the odds that the DNA belonged to another person was 1 in 220 billion. Follow Charles Street to 70 Charles Street, the Charles Street Meeting House.
Next stop.
The Charles Street Meeting House was designed by Asher Benjamin, who also designed many famous structures in Boston, including the African Meeting House, opened in 1806. He also helped with the planning of Quincy Market, opened in 1826. As were most churches in the early 19th century, this church was segregated, and Black Americans could only sit in the upper gallery. In 1836, one of the members of the church, Timothy Gilbert, invited several Black members of the church to sit with him in his personal pew and was promptly kicked out. He would go on to found the first integrated church in America. Despite this start, the Charles Street Meeting House was a major player in Boston's abolitionist movement and saw speakers like William Lloyd Garrison, Frederick Douglass, Sojourner Truth, and Charles Sumner. It was then sold and became the Charleston Street African Methodist Episcopal Church, the largest of the black churches in Boston after the Civil War. They left in 1939. Today, most of the exterior is preserved in its original historic form, though the interior has been developed for commercial and private use. Take a quick trip down Mount Vernon Street to 130 Mount Vernon Street, and you will see the Sunflower House.
Next stop.
This area is known as the Beacon Hill Flat. It used to be part of the Charles River, and filling it in was one of the earliest landmaking projects in Boston when it began in 1803. The land you're standing on used to be the top of Mount Vernon. This was the part of Beacon Hill where you would find stables and later garages of the larger homes up the hill. It was home to the blacksmiths and stable workers. But as Boston developed, these working homes and stables would later be turned into apartments and artist studios. This particular home was built in the 1840s and stands out in a neighborhood of Federal-style homes. This was the former home of artist Frank Hill Smith, who painted the ceiling frescoes in the Representatives' Hall of the Massachusetts State House. When he lived here, it was a simple wooden structure. In 1878, it was renovated to a Queen Anne style. American Queen Anne architecture often features overhangs, asymmetry, and differing wall textures. In 1904, the artist Gertrude Beals and her husband, Frank Bourne, moved into the home. She was a well-known watercolor artist, and her studio was located on the third floor. One of her paintings was of her in-home studio. Titled The Artist's Studio, Sunflower Castle, it is now in the collection of Historic New England. Notice the sunflower above the second floor window, where the home gets its name. This 3,200-square-foot house was listed on the market for $4.6 million in 2012. Back on Charles Street, continue your stroll to the end of Charles Street, and you will see the Charles MGH subway station. Cross under the station to the other side, and you will be outside the former Charles Street Jail.
Next stop.
This was the jail for Suffolk County from 1851 to 1990. Some of the inmates include former Boston Mayor James Michael Curley, Malcolm X, Sacco, and Vanzetti. The jail was forced to close in 1973 by federal court order, as overcrowding violated prisoner rights. It was shut down for good in 1990. The building, designed by Gridley James Fox Bryant in 1851, was built with a 90-foot octagonal rotunda, with jail wings stretching out in a cross, which allowed segregation of prisoners by class of crime. It was designed according to a 1790s humanitarian plan for prison reform known as the Auburn Plan. The Auburn Plan, among other reforms, called for designated areas for prisoners to work and exercise, along with individual cells. It is now a luxury hotel with plush lounges. There are two lounges and a restaurant inside with jail themes. The lounges are named The Clink and Alibis, and the Italian restaurant is called Scampo's. Alibis is the former drunk tank, and guests can enjoy a beverage behind steel bars and view mugshots of celebrities like Frank Sinatra, Mickey Rourke, and Lindsay Lohan. Once you exit the Liberty Hotel, you can jump on the subway. One stop back is Boston Common. Or walk back down Charles Street to Beacon Street and the Boston Common. It's about a 15-minute walk. Thank you for joining Atlas Audio Tours and free tours by foot. If you're interested in more history of Boston, join us on any of our guided tours or take one of our other self-guided tours. You can find more at freetoursbyfoot.com or using the link below. Please remember to write a review of this tour and join us in many of the other cities where we offer tours.